This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97th Annual Academy Awards, where nearly a billion people around the globe tuned in to a portion of the show. It started 7 p.m. Eastern, ended after 11 o'clock. Larry Richard, along with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Obviously, Paul, with your wake-up schedule, hard for you to watch those night shows. I hung in there till about 10, and Conan O'Brien in his first year hosting.
How did he do?
If you like Conan O'Brien, his sense of humor, I'm sure you liked it. If you didn't, it was... I'm a little partial. I still liked Billy Crystal when he would do those fantastic opens to the Oscars for many years. And then I think if you go old school, Johnny Carson and Bob Hope were the host. I mean, but after 97 years...
By the way, out of sheer boredom... I was tuning around and I found a Johnny Carson channel on my live TV feed, and I stopped and watched it, and there's Carson saying, tonight's guests include Bob Hope. And I thought, this Larry would love this.
Well, CBS Sunday Morning did one of those profiles because there's a new book about Johnny, and since he had hosted the Oscars, it aired, and I watched the whole thing. I was a big fan of Johnny Carson. Kind of got me in this business. He just made it look like it would be fun. And, of course, off camera, you know, at one point, he would have nightly 17 million people watch him, which is more than all three of the late night shows today.
Mm-hmm.
To combined. Give you some idea. Yeah, combined.
Yep.
To give you some idea how big a deal. So the Oscars have become, you know, it's really rare for a show to draw that many people, right? Sporting events, Super Bowl, World Series, those kind of things, but nearly a billion people. And the winners, top five categories, Best Picture, Anora, Best Actress is Mikey Madison from Anora. And then there's the Best Actor, Adrian Brody from The Brutalist. Best Supporting Actress, Zoe Saldana from Emilia Perez, and Kieran Culkin from A Real Pain. Best Supporting Actor. So you'll hear a lot of follow-up today from all the networks on the Academy Awards.
And you were saying earlier that the Best Picture winner was, that was expected.
Yeah, it was pretty much the odds-on favorite.
Okay.
And there's 10, you know, movies on that list. I only saw, and I love movies, 3 of the 10. And I'll check out Anora now since it's a winner. All right, this bridge story is really going to be an issue. It's closed indefinitely, right? So this is the bridge that goes over on the HOV lanes, Route 28, right?
Right, it's from the Veterans Bridge onto the Parkway North. And the work that they'll be doing is going to close Route 28 underneath there. They're actually not closed. There'll be lane restrictions on the northbound side of 28. only while the crews are working. Now, get this, Larry. They saw this small crack on inspection on Friday, and they say that small cracks near the top of support beams, you know, where the salt water comes down, that's not unusual at all and really not that serious. But what the crews did discover was a vertical crack in the pier column itself. They don't find them there typically. So they've closed that HOV lane that the column supports. And then they'll be peeling away the surface concrete to get a better look at it. This is all information, by the way, from the traffic maven, John Chumway, over at Channel 2.
John, I know.
It's a great report.
He sat in this studio for almost 16 years, and it was interesting. Every day he'd come home with his hard hat and his fluorescent vest.
No one knows traffic in this town better than John does. I mean, he knows the ins, the outs, the ups, the downs, and everything else.
So entering Schenley Park, headed toward Oakland, there's a sign, Bartlett and Hobart Streets, that sums up what it's like to get from Squirrel Hill in the East End to Oakland. All bridges closed ahead.
Oh, boy.
So we're going to have an expert on coming up about these bridge issues. And this just adds to the agony, is HOV line. So that's closed.
And by the way, the time frame on getting this thing solved, once they find out what's going on, is right now not known. But if the pier can be repaired or if it needs to be replaced, it's going to have a lot to do with how long it takes. Replacement is complicated. That could take months. Hopefully they don't need to do that. Hopefully they can find a fix.
This is not good news for commuters that in any way, shape, or form go through that corridor.
Yep.
Ouch. And what else is going on in terms of looking at the lighter side, or is it... You know, we always try to find a story that people are talking about locally, talking about the Penguins just keep finding ways to lose. So they let Toronto score two goals in the last 55 seconds of the second period, yep, including with 0.1 seconds remaining after they had taken a lead being down 2-0, then found a way to lose in overtime.
Yep. The plus on this was Sidney Crosby passing Bobby Hull for goals on the all-time list. He's 18th now. And Gordie Howe for assists. He's now 10th on that list. And I think it's symptomatic of the kind of season that the Penguins have had. The Penguins have been not so good. They're in last place in the division. But Sidney Crosby is having one of the better, if not one of the best, years of his career. At age, what, 37?
Yeah, what a talent.
Wow.
He's all we got left, because, you know, they had hoped this defenseman, Erik Karlsson, would help him.
Well, he made a big boo-boo yesterday.
He cost him a game yesterday.
Yeah.
Just a ridiculous, gave up right at the last second, unnecessary. Coach kind of called him out without calling him out by name.
They fixed the power play this year. The power play is in the top 10 in the league, so they managed to fix that problem, but... I would imagine, Larry, we're going to start to see players being traded.
Well, let's start. Yeah, they're
the rebuilding process.
They're going to gut this team.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Let's dial back. This has been a long, long homestand. So February 22nd, they lost to the Capitals, lost to the Rangers the next day, lost quick road trip to Philly, then did find a way to win in overtime on the 27th against Philly. Lost against Boston Saturday, lost against Toronto tomorrow. Now they go on the road for three games.
Yeah, and what, Tuesday they play where?
Tuesday they are in Colorado.
Okay.
The Avalanche.
That's a good team.
And
they have a player there, McKinnon, is lights out good.
Who are the 2025 Pirates? I'm going to head down to Bradenton today and find out.
Hey, it's a great question. I know that there's a lot of talk about an 18-year-old player who's making quite a splash.
We're going to go investigative down there. We're going to find out what's going on.
Actually, I was surprised to see you here this morning. I thought you would be there.
No, I'm going morning. After, and then we'll do the whole show from Lecom Park Wednesday, and then they'll ship me back in a FedEx tin or something. Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. And we'll keep you posted on breaking news, weather information, and what a weekend we had with high school basketball championships. Congrats to all the winners and all the participants in our team, because we are really proud of the work that's being done with our guys, right? You had Josh Roundtree, Dan Zangrilli, Paul Alexander, back-to-back-to-back games over the weekend, Paul. So it was pretty impressive.
And they're all award winners.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters recognized their work as being the best in Pennsylvania.
All right, international news. Pope Francis rested well overnight, fighting double pneumonia. The Vatican said that on Sunday, the pontiff, 88 years old, was now stable. He no longer required the use of a mechanical ventilation system to breathe. Also, the story of Ukrainian President Zelensky meeting with European leaders to talk about their support for his efforts against Russia. And tomorrow night, President Trump will address a joint session. This is not the State of the Union. This is just to outline his vision and where we've gone so far. Jefferson Parish cancels Fat Tuesday, Paul.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Because of weather.
Yeah, Jefferson Parish is the parish right next door to Orleans Parish. That's where the suburbs are, like Metairie and Kenner. I once lived there, and that's a big deal.
That's a very big deal.
I mean, some of the biggest parades are supposed to happen there tomorrow.
Threat of high winds, wind gusts of 50 miles an hour.
Wow.
So they're trying to work on a alternative. But if you're going to Mardi Gras, you want to be part of the parade. And, I mean, that's the whole big deal, right?
Yeah.
Fat Tuesday. So
pretty much everybody shows up for one of the big major parades on Fat Tuesday. There's several of them.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Oscars. A billion people. That's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Why would they care, somebody might say? Few people have seen all the movies, too. But for some reason, there is interest. And MLB is considering to have Pete Rose posthumously removed from the ineligible list. Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred considering a petition to have Pete Rose removed from that list, which means that he could potentially...
Right.
Be put into the Hall of Fame post his passing last year in September.
A background on that, an attorney for the Rose family is the one who's doing the petition with the Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, and he can do that if he wants to lift the ban, but the Hall of Fame is a separate entity, and they came up, in fact, with a separate rule, a Pete Rose rule, about permanent bans, so they would have to decide to lift that. I want to see what happens there.
And the Iditarod starts today in Fairbanks, Alaska, beginning at 11 a.m. Teams will take off from Pike's Waterfront Lodge every 2 minutes, passing under an arch before traveling to this river. This marks the fourth time Fairbanks has hosted the event. And
I wonder, do they say mush during that at all?
No, but I'm sure their minds go to mush. After, I mean,
who wants to do that?
I don't know.
I mean, it takes a special kind of person to want to do that.
Yes, it does.
The dogs like it, though.
Do they?
Yeah.
Good for them. Mush. If you've ever been to an Iditarod, please call us immediately. And coming up, we're going to talk to a bridge engineer, about all the issues that we're having with the bridges around town, especially the new development over the week. Troubles with bridges. Instead of bridges over troubled waters, it's the opposite. Troubled bridges over everything here right now. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen, and we welcome Ken Harries, who is a professor of civil engineering at the University of Pittsburgh, talking about bridge repairs, of which there are many. Kent, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with what's going on with these bridges over the HOV lanes over 528 or Route 28 and 579. I mean, this over the weekend, I saw some video of the structure, these support structures that have deteriorated, and looks like they're closed indefinitely. So until they determine how they can repair or replace it, sounds like it's going to take a while.
Probably very likely, and regrettably, these things are, they do happen, and I'm afraid they're going to continue to happen. We've been neglecting maintenance for an awfully long time.
Ken, I was looking at a report earlier this morning that says that the support column that's in question here, the one that they're looking at closely, typically they'll find some cracks at the top of a support column where you would get the salt leakage and that, but this, they say, is a long vertical crack in the column. Why is that a bigger problem?
I've not seen this particular column, and I'm not familiar with the report that you're referring to, so I'm a little bit reluctant to comment. But a long vertical crack could indicate a couple of different potential problems, including a load bearing issue. Is one thing, in which case, certainly out of an appropriate abundance of caution, PennDOT needs to shut this down and determine what's going on and determine what needs to happen to get the structure back open.
It's been a little over 3 years, January 28th, 2022, when the Fern Hollow Bridge collapsed, and obviously that's first and foremost what we're trying to avoid here as they go around. And different municipalities, the city, the state, the county, it depends on which bridge it is, right? Who's responsible, correct?
Yes. Ultimately, the bridge. I don't know who owns the HOB lanes. My suspicion it is PennDOT, I suspect.
Yes.
The owner of that particular bridge. But ultimately, the inspection process is still overseen by PennDOT, regardless of who the owner is.
So you're talking about, let's talk about all the bridges around Schenley Park. A bunch of those have been closed for a while. You ought to know this, being at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yes, I do. I don't take those bridges. I live in East End, but yes, absolutely.
You can't get there from here. One of them says all bridges are closed ahead. Do we have any idea when we're going to fix all these bridges?
Do we have any idea when we're going to have the resources to do so? Obviously, we have limited resources to maintain and to fix bridges. When we have situations like we have in Schenley Park, obviously those go to the top of the pile. And as a result, some other bridges that require attention get knocked down the pile a little bit. The priority falls. I don't know because of the changes in the Schenley Park bridges situation, where the first one was closed and then later the second. I'm not exactly certain what the time frame on that is at the moment.
One of the things that I was curious about in this report, by the way, that I was referring to is by John Shumway. You'll find it on the KDK-TV website. He's at the end of it talking about, they're just now getting a look at this support column. They're taking the concrete off from the top of it to get a look at it, and they've got quite a job ahead of them to figure out what's going on, don't they?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's a lot of there remain a number of possibilities, and we can't discount that this is a little bit less of a structural issue. But because of the weather we've been having, the very extreme freezes and then thaws and whatnot. We could be also looking at issues associated with water ingress and the water freezing and thawing and damaging the concrete.
Well, the Panther Hollow Bridge was shut down, what, October 2024? Structural concerns. These mm-hmm. issues just keep piling up. So go ahead.
Yeah, part of it is because we start looking following Fern Hollow. Needless to say, there was a lot of attention paid to starting to look at local bridges and see if there are other scenarios. And of course, the very first bridge that was looked at was shut down into Schenley Park. That's the Anderson span, and Panther Hollow followed. And so it is good that we are looking at these things. We have had deferred maintenance, and in some cases very no maintenance for decades. We do need to start looking at these things, and unfortunately, when you defer maintenance, eventually it comes back and piles up, and I'm afraid that that's what we're starting to see now.
I guess, Ken, a lot of people that are listening are probably disappointed to find out that our infrastructure dollars, all that money that was being spent, that wasn't being spent on things like this.
Well, I mean, frankly, you don't get your name on a bridge repair, and that's the responsibility that we have to improve infrastructure, to add new infrastructure as different needs, different demands arise. It's not like the older infrastructure, stuff that's already been built, goes away. And so we're constantly adding. We're very rarely taking away, removing infrastructure, in which case it just keeps compounding. And so if you do keep compounding, if you have one car, you have a certain amount that you need to spend on maintenance. And if you have four cars, you have a lot more to spend and a lot more time, and you're going to have fewer resources spent on each element. And unfortunately, that is sort of where we are at this point, and we are looking at infrastructure that is, in the Fern Hollow case, not quite as old as some, but, you know, 50, 60, 70 years old.
Are they doing, the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County now, since Fern Hollow, a good job of inspecting these bridges?
I think they're more aware of it. I'll give you that. Nobody wants to be the inspector that missed something. And frankly, I think the fact that we are having the fact that we are talking about these things, the fact that occasionally structures are shut down on quite short notice, is an indication that we are doing we're doing a good job at the inspection end of it. We're finding the problems. Hopefully, we will find all of the existing problems.
All right, Professor, thanks for your time this morning.
All right, thanks much.
You got it. Professor Kent Harries, University of Pittsburgh Civil Engineering, and he is known around the country as an expert in bridge structure.
Well, he sure sounds like one.
Yeah, and there was a hint of frustration, I guess, to some degree. The reality is so many bridges around here to keep up.
Yeah, his analogy about the cars having one or four, I think that's a great analogy. And we have so many bridges here. I mean, we call it the city of bridges, right?
Right.
So it stands to reason that a lot of bridges that were built in the same generation are going to be needing attention at the same time.
And we're going to get more on this particular situation that did develop over the weekend with this bridge, the HOV lanes over Route 28. It's going to be a major issue for many. And we'll get you details coming up right after the top of the hour. With the KDK Radio Storm Center, brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van, Butler Transit Authority, and McVeigh Plumbing and Heating. This story, did you see the video of those columns that support the bridges that we're talking about when it comes to the HOV lanes?
No, I didn't.
They are... When you see it, you're going, oh, you can see the column, like a Roman column. It's mm-hmm. round, and there's a crack. You could see the crack that's vertical.
Okay.
And that's problematic. And then the deterioration of the concrete to where you're seeing the rebar.
Okay. That's disturbing.
Well, that's apparently...
And it may be okay. It just looks bad.
Yeah. And obviously, first and foremost, you don't want to have a Fern Hollow bridge collapse repeat.
Please, no.
With all these tremendous, you know, issues we have with bridges and funding.
Oh, the upside is they're looking, right? We found it before it turned into a bigger problem.
So we're going to get some more details on that coming up here in our next hour. And also... Want to talk this morning with Lenny McAllister. Will join us in our 8 o'clock hour. It's a lot on the radar. A very contentious meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky and Donald Trump in the Oval Office with a whole group of people. I mean, there was the vice president was there.
Oh, and the
this is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Paul, good to have you back in the air chair.
Yeah,
we missed you last week.
Very
glad you're feeling a little better.
And raw discussion.
You look good.
And
so
you had after that
Zelensky that was going around or is going around for many.
I was just working on a story about
tomorrow night
the effectiveness of the vaccine.
The president will address a joint session.
The funny part of it is that
State of the Union.
Well, they're saying, oh, it's not.
It's not.
Anecdotally, it's not an effective vaccine
kind of
this season. The CDC
what's
data
transpired
says,
eh, so
no,
far,
not really.
Where President
Still,
Trump
though,
wants this thing to
in
go.
In terms of cases,
that's
in our area, we're seeing more hospitalizations than we have since 2009.
Yeah, and you said it's the worst in 17 years nationally.
Uh-huh. More cases.
Wow. And a lot of people are still going to deal with it this month. You know, you get the four season month of March where we're going to get even in this very week a little bit of everything.
I don't know the official dates of flu season. I assume it's like September through March maybe or something like that.
No, it carries longer than that. We'll get an update on it because a lot of people I've noticed have been dealing with it. Did you get a flu shot?
Yes, I did.
And do you believe that helped you mitigate what could have been maybe worse symptoms?
I can't be sure about that, but I'm glad I got it anyway.
Right.
I am concerned that, you know, had I not gotten it, how much more sick would I have been? I don't know. You know, but who wants to take that risk?
Right. Well, good to have you back. And in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Jason Zhang, who's the PennDOT District 11 executive, about this issue with the new discovery over the weekend. It started on Friday with a bridge inspection, the HOV lanes that go over Route 28, and we'll get kind of a mental picture of exactly where we're talking about and talk about what the plan is moving forward, and we will do that with the guy. I mean, he's the number one person you would want to interview, right, Paul?
Absolutely. He's got the latest information. I mean, what there is to be known, except for the guys who are looking at the pillar right now.
Yeah, so
we're about to.
We'll get the latest here in just a couple of minutes. Obviously, he's very busy this morning, but he has agreed to join us on the Big K Morning Show, and we appreciate him for that. Last night, nearly a billion people around the world watched a portion of the 97th Annual Academy Awards with a wrap-up from Hollywood. CBS's Donya Backus.
The Oscars love was spread around on a night where it was anyone's guess who would take home some of the top awards. In the end, it was the indie film Anora that came out on top. Anora, a strip club Cinderella story without a fairy tale ending, was the night's big winner with five awards, including Best Picture.
This film was made on the blood, sweat, and tears of incredible indie artists.
Anora's Mikey Madison beat veteran Demi Moore to win her first Oscar for leading actress.
This is a dream come true. I'm probably going to wake up tomorrow.
The Brutalist grabbed three Oscars, including Adrian Brody's Best Lead Actor Award.
I believe if the past can teach us anything, it's a reminder to not let hate go unchecked.
Rounding out a season of wins, Kieran Culkin and Zoe Saldana took home statues for Best Supporting Actor and Actress.
I have no idea how I got here. I've just been acting my whole life.
I am a proud child of immigrant parents, and I am the first American of Dominican origin to accept an Academy Award, and I know I will not be the last.
There's no place like home.
The Oscars opened with a moving musical tribute to the city of Los Angeles following the devastating wildfires by Wicked stars Ariana Grande.
For the rainbow.
And Cynthia Erivo.
I think of a place.
Then performed Defying Gravity from their blockbuster big screen musical. Los Angeles first responders were also honored during an onstage appearance. Other tributes included ones to Gene Hackman, the James Bond movie franchise, and the late Quincy Jones. Donya Backus, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Morgan Freeman, a very close friend of Gene Hackman's, came out and expressed his condolences and sympathies to so many people in that room who thought Gene Hackman was kind of special.
The reactions I have been reading since the announcement of his death his peers have been calling him one of the best. Some of them say he was the best.
And the circumstances around the death of his wife, family, dog, and him suggest that there's some criminal element. Now, originally, they didn't think so.
I mean, the last time that he had a data recovered on his pacemaker was several days before he died, where his body had been there for several days after the last reported, you know, blip on his pacemaker. So it could have been as many as weeks, they say. This is absolutely fascinating and intriguing to know what happened here. But I am happy to say that he lived a long, successful life.
Yeah, it does not add up in any way, shape, or form. So, sad part of that story.
Do you have a favorite Hackman performance, out of curiosity?
He's been in so many good movies. He's played the good guy, the bad guy. He's action hero. He's played romance. He's done comedies. He could do it all. And he was a United States Marine at age 16.
Mm-hmm. And how did he pull that off?
It's a fascinating story. He wanted to get away from his hometown. You know, he wanted to, and he joked about this with Johnny Carson, of all things. Or no, it was David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to meet girls. That's what he said.
I love that. You know, my favorite performance by far and away is Hoosiers.
Oh, that too. I mean,
that's the one for me.
Yeah, see, he was the face of so many great characters over the years. Coming up next, what's going on with these bridges that's closed the HOV lanes? We're going to talk to the District 11 PennDOT executive next, Jason Zhang. There is big news affecting commuters, and we are joined by PennDOT District 11 executive Jason Zhang, who may be the busiest person in the city today. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
I'm sure you've had better days. As of Friday, some inspections turned up some major concerns about this bridge over Route 28 with the HOV lanes, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And so try for those to paint a picture of what exactly your crew's inspection team found and what's the game plan?
Yeah, so it was basically just during a routine bridge inspection, and I think you probably know every bridge gets inspected every 2 years. So it was a crack, a rather sizable crack, but in a location that from a structural perspective we weren't too concerned with. We were really concerned with concrete coming off, like sheets of concrete falling off. So we were down there to remove that concrete, but what we found was the deterioration in the concrete was much deeper than we had anticipated, typically what we see. So we shut the HOV down, doing some assessment. We worked all weekend with just getting a contractor out there, inspection, concrete soundings, things like that. So we're investigating right now. So the HOV is going to stay closed, unfortunately, just for safety. And we are working on what is the repair going to look like. Are we going to repair the pier that's there? Are we going to have to replace it? So we're not sure just yet. We're working on that. We're gathering data. We have to take cores to get a full assessment of just what we have down there. So that's what's going on.
Yeah, Jason, apparently it's going to take some time to get to that. I guess they've got to lift the concrete on the bridge deck above it to get at it. And below it, there'll be lane restrictions down on 28 while they're doing that work.
Yeah, so we're likely going to have a single lane on 28 there, northbound and southbound, probably for an extended period of time. But again, it's a little too early to know exactly what we're going to have to do until we know what our repair procedure is going to be. But this is before this section of 28 northbound is just after the off ramp from 279, and it's before the on ramp from the Veterans Bridge. So it could have a little bit of impact if it's in a single lane. Right now, it's not in a single lane. We have the left lane, which is an off ramp to 279 North Madison Avenue. we've got that restricted, but the ramp is still the exit ramp is still open. So right now, it's not affecting really anything. That southbound direction of 28, again, this is after the exit ramps to 279 and the Veterans Bridge. So the traffic volumes are much, much lower. That's the piece that's going down into the north side. So that's going to be down to one lane for our access and contractors' access. So I don't know that that's going to be too impactful either. So I think it could have been a much worse location. It's obviously a challenging location to get there. I mean, if you look at the bridges on a map there, we call that like a spaghetti situation. It's just, what bridge am I looking at? There's bridges everywhere. So, yeah.
Jason, just so I'm clear, I want to be clear with our listeners when we do reports going on from this interview. So right now there's one lane restriction on the northbound side of 28, and there could be some closures on the southbound side, but that hasn't happened yet.
No, that's correct. Right now, as we speak, everything is open to two lanes in each direction. It's just we're taking a little bit of the off ramp to Madison Avenue, but the ramp is still open. So there's no restrictions right now. But moving forward into this week, we're probably gonna have to take a lane in each direction. So we'll have one lane on 28 in both directions maintained. For now. And what you're going to see after today's rush hour is we have channelizers out there right now. We're going to be moving in with concrete barrier, so we can protect the workers. We've got more concrete to remove from the pier. So it's just to protect the traveling public and also protect the workers that are down there behind the barrier working.
Outbound in the afternoon traffic that would be parking at the stadiums, that on-ramp actually near PNC Park, will the HOV lanes be open from that point north outbound, or is everything shut down indefinitely when it comes to the HOV lanes?
That's a great question. Right now, the HOV is completely shut down. However, we are looking to see if we can get it open. I'm pretty confident we can get it open in the outbound direction. But that's from the North Shore. So the Bedford on-ramp, which is over near PPG Arena, that's going to stay closed because that's the ramp, that's the bridge that's covering that section. So, but the area from the North Shore is not going to be affected. So it's just a matter of, can we operate that system? That's a complex system of barriers that come up and down, gates, the gate system, there's wrong way detection. There's a lot going on there to make sure that operates safely with the reversible direction aspect of it. So we are working on testing the system to see if we can operate the system without that Bedford Avenue on-ramp. So, in summary, I think we are going to have it open to at least outbound once we get through the process of making sure we can do that safely.
Jason, really, really appreciate your time detailing this. Obviously, very meaningful to our commuters. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you, and thanks for everybody's patience as we work through this. Thank you.
We'll stay in tune and give everybody updates as necessary. PennDOT District 11 Executive Jason Zhang on the Big K Morning Show. Every Monday at this time, we check in with Brian Caranta, brought to you by Secure Money Advisors. Love the financial tips we get every week. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Larry. How are you today?
I'm good, except we're going to talk about taxes and retirement.
I know.
But that's okay, because you have to think about taxes. It's a subject everyone dreads, but it's especially important to understand how they work in retirement, because everything matters. So tell us how withdrawals from retirement accounts can impact someone's tax situation.
Yeah, absolutely, Larry. One of the key things retirees need to be aware of is that withdrawals from retirement accounts can significantly affect how much you owe in taxes each year. For instance, once you hit age 73, you're required to start taking minimum distributions from your traditional IRAs, 401k accounts, and this is known as the required minimum distribution. You'll also hear advisors refer to it as the RMD. Now, this RMD is not a choice. You have to take it. You're forced to take this distribution. And if you don't do any planning prior to this age of 73 and your IRA accounts or 401k accounts have continued to accumulate into a high balance, there's going to be a significant amount of money under this required minimum distribution that needs to come out. Could cause you to pay more money on your Social Security, cause you to have your the cost of your Medicare go up. So these are all things you got to keep in mind as you go into retirement.
Yeah, so you're saying RMDs can push you into a higher tax bracket too, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you're not careful, these withdrawals can bump you up into a higher tax bracket, leading to a larger tax bill. And that's why it's crucial to plan your withdrawals strategically. And these are, you know, even withdrawals that you're taking prior to the RMD age, if you're like most of our clients where they are not receiving pensions from their employers, the majority of our clients have to start taking withdrawals out of their retirement accounts when they retire to get the additional income they need. And those withdrawals will have the same impact on taxation in retirement.
So what about deductions? Do retirees have fewer deductions?
Yes, for sure. I mean, many retirees find that they have fewer deductions once they've paid off their mortgage. And, of course, their children are grown. They no longer have dependents. So this can further increase their taxable income.
So knowing which accounts are taxable and which aren't is absolutely essential. So can you break that down for us?
Yeah, sure. So it's important to distinguish between taxable and non-taxable accounts. So, for example, withdrawals from traditional 401ks, IRAs are typically taxed at ordinary income. However, Roth IRAs are different, right? Their withdrawals are generally tax-free if you've met the requirements. And portions of your Social Security benefits can also be taxable. Up to 85% of your Social Security can be taxable, as a matter of fact. And other investments like annuities and capital gains, they have all their own tax rules. So it starts to become pretty complicated.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep track of. So what strategies can retirees use to manage their tax burden?
Yeah, I love that question, Larry. So there's several strategies that retirees can use to manage their taxes effectively. Diversifying your retirement accounts can help, such as having a mix of traditional and Roth accounts. Remember, traditional accounts mean that when money comes out, you got to pay taxes. Roth means that any money that comes out is tax-free. So considering a Roth conversion might also be beneficial as it can reduce future taxable income. This is when we're moving traditional IRA money or traditional 401k money, and we're saying we're going to pay the taxes on it now, and we're going to convert it, and then we're going to continue to grow it, but we're going to grow it in a Roth account, and we're going to grow it tax-free for the future.
My advice, not that anyone wants it, is to sit down with you and work through all this stuff and navigate the complexities of taxes and retirement. RightTrackPittsburgh.com with Brian Caranta. Brian, thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Larry, have a great week. We'll see you again next week. Thank you.
Coming up in our next hour, we'll be joined by Lenny McAllister, one of our team members who wears many hats. Also, a political analyst, lot to digest starting on Friday through the weekend. And then tomorrow night, President Trump will address a joint session and kind of lay out the game plan from here and sort through what has been done so far. Meanwhile, Aaron, do you have direct deposit?
Yes, I do.
Okay. A lot of people do. It's just easier. The money gets there quicker. You don't have to deal with checks.
Right.
From their employers in particular. How about this? Imagine taking a look at your bank account and find that you have $81 trillion in it. That's correct. With a T.
That's incomprehensible right now. That's, wow.
Well, apparently it happened. And it happened last April, but was just reported. Seems Citigroup accidentally almost credited $81 trillion into a customer's account instead of $280 they were expecting.
Oh my, what a slip up.
A payments employee totally missed the gaffe, But a second worker noticed it and was able to clear the payment before it was processed.
I was just about to say.
So we never really got the $81 trillion into the account. But can you imagine?
I mean, hear me out. I think it'd be debatable on if you're a good person or not if you tell your employer, hell, hi.
You accidentally put $81 trillion in my account.
Way more zeros
than I was
expecting. Well,
let me ask you this. What if it happened? And then the person decided, well, I'm going to spend as much as I can before they figure
right.
it out.
That's what I could see happening, 100%. Or just doing withdrawals, too. Like, oh, I'm going to get as much cash as I could.
To give you some examples, so Elon Musk is the richest person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And at last report, and that was in January, he's probably got a lot more now, he was by far the richest person, $439 billion. So that's not even half a trillion.
Which, that's why I said it's hard to even fathom. So, you know, I'd say take it to the ATM, take out as many million as you can, and say, you know, here, take the rest of these zeros that I can't comprehend. I'll be fine.
Just for a minute, you think,
just fantasize.
What can I do with all that money? 7:55 at KDK from the PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center. This is the Big K Morning Show. Welcome to a new month. It's going to be a busy week. We have Fat Tuesday tomorrow. Lent is Wednesday, Ash Wednesday for Christians, and that starts the Lenten season. And it's the four-season month, and we're going to get a little taste of everything just this week alone. And every Monday in our 8 o'clock hour, we invite one of our own team members, Lenny McAllister, in studio. Talk a little bit about what's transpired in the past week. And boy, there's been no shortage of news, but first and foremost, hope you had a good weekend.
Very eventful, very good. I had to celebrate a birthday. I was talking about that yesterday on my airwaves. That was fun. And I want to publicly acknowledge my son did a great job and ended up qualifying for both a statewide and national competition in forensics, which is public speaking. And I'm really proud of him. It was a really exciting weekend for him. He was through the moon. And there's nothing, Larry, as you know, as a dad and as a granddad, there's nothing like seeing your kids and grandkids excited and succeeding. It's one thing to do something yourself. It's when you get an award, you're grateful, you appreciate it, you're happy. But to see your kids be on cloud nine over something they worked hard to get to, there's nothing like that in the world.
Agreed. All right, where do you want to dig in? I was thinking we'd start with the uncomfortable conversation that developed in the Oval Office between Ukrainian President Zelensky and President Donald Trump, with a full complement in that room, including J.D. Vance, the Vice President. You had Secretary of State. You had a ton of reporters. And it was a long conversation, but towards the end got really ugly.
It did. And everybody had a plant to stake, no pun intended. I think from the American perspective, people expected that the administration would expect the Ukrainian president, Zelensky, to acquiesce to whatever Trump and Vance were advocating in order to stop the war. And Zelensky, for his part, has to stand for his people and say, look, peace and quiet are not the same as quiet. If you have peace and it's not peace and quiet and security, it's not the same. And it's part of what people have mentioned about Putin over the last 10 years, which is even if you stop the fighting, if the ambition and the threat remain, you're not going to have peace for long. And I think the interesting thing that people overlook, the trigger that had Trump jump in and Vance really go after him, is when Zelensky said, you have this big, beautiful ocean that's keeping you away from these type of things. But eventually you're going, in essence, he said, eventually you're going to feel this pain and you're going to have to deal with this yourself. And that's what prompted everybody to kind of really go over the moon and go after him. And it goes to the point of when you deal with somebody that has global aspirations for domination and you try to appease them, historically speaking, over the last 125 years, it doesn't work, appeasement. It only leads to an escalated situation. This is exactly what people talked about with World War II and the comparisons to Hitler in the beginning of World War II, and saying, listen, this the last time we saw this in Europe, it led to a global war where the only time that nuclear or atomic weapons were dropped was at the end of that quote-unquote conflict. Do you understand what's coming up? Which, in a very scary way, also does not downplay in any way what Donald Trump said. It says you're risking World War III. I think people need to understand that this is going down a dangerous path if this is not handled correctly.
And unlike during World War II, there are many more nations that are nuclear capable, and it would only take one of those one time to really throw the entire world into really perhaps World War III. I mean, you don't say that lightly. That said, Donald Trump said, look, we have all the cards. He's not wrong. I mean, we do financially and militarily. But I understood it to be the deal was going to unravel like this. You give us access to the minerals that you have in your country, and we'll be there, and our presence there will keep Putin away. Is it too simplified?
In an ideal situation, that would make sense. And that's the argument that the administration and many Republicans are making. The caveat to that, Larry, is this. If America is more inclined to acquiesce to Russia than it is to NATO or Europe or Ukraine, then at the drop of a hat, those lines can start shifting. Now, people have to, and there are those that may say, yeah, but the Americans wouldn't do that because they would be trying to secure peace because their own self-interest are invested there. But you also have an American president now that does not trust NATO, is not as close to NATO as other American presidents have been. You have an American president that's been dropping tariffs on our neighbors and our allies. So the distance is being created from our traditional allies over the last 80 years. It's not beyond the pale for the Ukrainian president to say, I would like that deal, but I can't trust it as much as I would just because of how this president interacts with NATO and the rest of the world.
Immediately, Ukrainian President Zelensky was invited to Europe and welcomed by the Prime Minister of England and other nations. But the U.S. is still a key factor in all of this. So we'll see if anything can be salvaged with that relationship moving forward. That said, tomorrow night, Donald Trump will address a joint session. This is not a State of the Union. What's the difference?
State of the Union is scheduled annually. It is something that is almost like a report card. It's almost like laying out of an agenda in regards to this is what we've done, this is what we're gonna do. A joint address of Congress usually has one central theme, and it's going to hammer home one central theme and move forward from there and allow that president to try to create a narrative or shape a narrative on a very specific item to try to make the case and then rally support.
Well, let's talk about what those items might be. We're with Lenny McAllister on the Big K Morning Show. Studio Lenny, I would imagine there are so many bullet points for the president when he addresses the joint session tomorrow night. What do you think will be at the top of the list?
You know, when you asked that question, Larry, you said bullet points, and I said, okay, this president may be given bullet points, but this president oftentimes doesn't go off the teleprompter and oftentimes doesn't stay on script. So there may be bullet points, but that's different than asking, what do we actually think Trump's going to say?
What do you think to him of all the executive orders he signed? Dozens and dozens and dozens in all of the tentacles of following all the stories of what's happening, and with Elon Musk and the cuts being made in all the different departments. I'm just curious what he's going to open with tomorrow night. What, meaning, what's most important to him to get across to a joint session?
I think the most important thing that he'll try to do is to try to pin the blame on, quote unquote, the swamp. He may not use that phraseology.
He might.
But the true. But the way to justify what's been going on with Doge, what's been going on with Elon Musk, all the questionable cuts, even Republican congressmen and constituencies pushing back on these job losses, the only way you can push back on that with the bully pulpit is to say, hey, listen, I didn't make this mess. Some of you all have been here for 40 years, and you acquiesced to this mess. You created this labyrinth of bureaucracy that isn't working for the American people, and they elected me. They gave me a quote-unquote mandate because I've been elected twice to dismantle this. And so you all can complain all you want. You had 40 years to do it. They elected me to do it, and that's why I'm doing it now. So sit down and be quiet and let me do what the American people want me to do. That's what I think he's going to try to do, and do that in front of millions of people tomorrow night. I think that's going to probably be first and foremost, and then I think from there he'll pivot into what happened on Friday and why he feels that the Europeans and the Ukrainians are taking advantage of America and America's support for Ukraine.
I think if you ask anybody and you sat them down, it's so polarizing, you know, the way it is. But if you said, look, does it make sense to make cuts in the federal budget of ridiculous expenditures, everybody would say, of course it is. What's happening here, though, is it a process of, hey, we're going as far as we can go, and then we'll retract backwards instead of going in and trying to figure out what is legit and important, as opposed to just making sweeping cuts and then having people come back to them and say, hey, wait a minute, you can't fire these people because they are actually essential and they can't be replaced. And we've seen some of that.
We have, but the retort to that, and I'm going to step in the administration's shoes for just a second. The retort to that is, we are trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. And again, you all could have fixed this a long time ago. You all didn't try to bend down this debt. You had the sequester and it just froze the debt. You've done nothing to eliminate the debt. And if you don't eliminate the debt, this country's going to be bankrupt and we're going to lose our country. This is the only way you can make America great again. This is the only way you can save the country. And sometimes you have to take drastic measures and figure it out in order to save the millions and billions of dollars we have to save. Now, with that said, of course, the Democrats are going to come back and say, you're only trying to do all these cuts and try to get to $1 trillion, $2 trillion saved so that you can pay for your tax cuts that you also want passed in your budget. And that's where the battle of narratives is going to come about if it goes down that path.
The tariffs are to kick in, particularly with Mexico and Canada closest to home. And there's a story about how Honda may produce the Civic in Indiana, not Mexico, due to those tariffs. Those are the kind of things that someone would say, well, that works, but I'm not an economic genius by any stretch, but if you tariff us, they're going to tariff back. We tariff you. The money, somebody's got to pay for all that.
That's number one. Number two, if you take it to an area, notice they said Indiana. They didn't say Pennsylvania. They didn't say Ohio. They didn't say New Jersey. I've just picked three highly unionized states. Now, I'm sure that there are worker unions in Indiana. I get that. But if you start moving these plants back to the United States, which we all want the jobs, but then if people try to have an economic model that looks like the 1950s and 60s when it comes to unionized labor, and the cost starts going up, people forget the whole reason why these plants went to Mexico is because it was too expensive to create those goods here in the United States and still sell it to an American consumer base or a North American consumer base at a price point where consumers would buy it. So yes, it's great that it's come back to Indiana, but if the leaders in that plant that's coming from Mexico to Indiana play this wrong, you're just driving the same costs right back up that led to the situation we saw in the 1990s. And if you don't remedy that, all that's going to happen is either the plant's going to go someplace else, maybe it goes to Western Europe, maybe it goes to Central Europe, or it simply just closes And that has an impact on the economy as well. So it's not just moving plants from one place to another. It's how do you fix the underlying structure that's been in place for 30 to 40 years ever since NAFTA really came into effect in the early 90s.
We'll have more with Lenny McAllister coming up. I'm going to ask you the really important question of the day is, well, I'll save it. I've been waiting.
That was a great radio teaser, Larry.
All weekend to ask you this. I may have to let this entire song play.
So you can figure out how you want to word the tease that you teased before the break.
Yeah. 8:38. The Big K Morning Show, Larry Richard with Lenny McAllister. And this is a question that I'm really curious what you're going to say. Of the top 10 movies that were up for an Oscar last night, did you see any of these films? So Anora was the winner, followed by The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan thing, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, and Wicked. Have you seen any of those films?
Does it count if I say that I have a kid that watched all of them and then had an Oscar party last night? Does that give me any?
No.
Then I lost, no.
No, it's not. Most people, like you're in that prime family thing right now where you got kids, you got a job, you're juggling schedules, you're going to basketball games, you're doing school stuff, you're traveling on your work. You don't have time for this stuff.
No.
My father-in-law used to say that. He goes, I don't have time. When I'm raising kids, I don't have time to see movies, go see movies. But I love movies. And I have only seen 3 of the 10. But yet, what is the interest? They said last night, Conan O'Brien was the MC, first time for him, that there are 1 billion people around the world who watch part of the Oscars. There's nothing else on television that comes close to that, even the Super Bowl. Maybe the Super Bowl, I don't know. 1 billion. Around the world now. What makes that so interesting?
Well, I can understand that. Now, for throwing it out there, my wonderful 25-year-old, he went to NYU, went to school for entertainment and film and the business of film and media, and did really well in school. He lives in New York now, and yes, this was his Super Bowl, Larry. I talked to him on Saturday. He was rushing to go see 2 more films to make sure he saw all 10 on that list. And then he was having an Oscar party because that's bigger than his Super Bowl party. So he's in that game.
That's cool.
That's his thing.
How old?
25. But he's wanted to be a director since he was 3 years old. So he was going to NYU or USC since he was 3 years old.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. So, but that's him. That said, though, the billion that you mentioned, think about the type of films that are on that list that you gave. They touch different cultures around the world. So you're grabbing people from Western Europe. A movie about the Catholic Church is a global religion. You talk about, a Russian oligarch. You're talking about current events, but also a different culture. You're pulling people from everywhere, and then Bollywood and Hollywood and New York. You talk about Bollywood, Hollywood, New York. That's a lot of people just right there.
And the foreign film category is obviously huge,
yep,
too. Most of the other awards don't do that. But this Anora, I guess I'm going to have to see it now.
I heard about it on the way here. On the way to the station this morning. Apparently, it is about a sex worker that falls for the son of a Russian oligarch. And then she helps him stand up to the family that he comes from in regards, I guess, to their relationship or how this kid's going to develop. That's all I heard about it. And that was the big winner. I think they won 5 Oscars between different staff and the like.
Yeah, I was just curious if you saw any of these films.
Trust me, look, I don't see any of them, but I hear about this stuff all the time when I talk to my son.
I like that. Aaron, how many of the top 10 have you seen?
I think I saw 2. what's the list? I saw Wicked, and that actually might be it. I didn't see Conclave, but Lenny, earlier I told them, I said, when I looked up Anora, it said strip, what was it? Strip club Cinderella story is how it was described when I looked it up. So that was a beautiful synopsis you gave us.
Who's the famous singer that she used to do that? Well, she's real famous right now.
She used to be a stripper?
Yeah.
Cardi B.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny you two knew.
Spot on.
I thought Wicked was a movie about the adventures of Matt Dillon and Ben Affleck, and I was completely wrong.
Completely wrong.
Set in South Boston. But I digress. I was off on that.
They always have these bizarre plot twists, and I've seen these lists of the top 10 movies, right, for the whole year. So down the road, when you get a chance, well, you finally do at home get a chance to stream one of these movies, you're looking for something, well, it was an Oscar-nominated film, and I've watched some of them over the years, and I go, I don't get it.
Lainey and I used to do that, and those are called the 10-minute movies, because you watch it for 10 minutes, and then you go to something else on Netflix or another streaming right. service, and you're like, yeah, okay. Oh, subtitles, great. This should be intriguing and intellectual. Oh, wait, no, never mind. And look, really thought out movies we can follow. Every now and then there is one that you're like, hey, I could see why this is good. But then there are others, to your point, Larry and Aaron. It's just like, no.
That ain't happening.
Not a yes, chance.
Exactly.
All right, when we come back, Lenny, what do you think's the most important issue that we'll be hearing about this week? Larry Richard with Lenny McAllister getting ready to wrap up our weekly visit in our 8 o'clock hour. Busy week, so the president will address a joint session tomorrow, and we'll see what he lays out ahead. Sure, there'll be some questions, plenty afterwards, but what do you think will be the biggest story this week?
Probably Doge. You got another round of the tell me five things you did with your life. Emails going out, and it being said that it's mandatory, and you still have certain departments saying, ah, poo-poo on that Elon guy, don't worry about it. And then you get Elon Musk tweeting out, hey, this is mandatory by way of the president, which of course makes people cynically say, well, who exactly is the president? But all that said, this is going to hit a deadline of 11:59 tonight with this address coming tomorrow.
You're talking about the request to tell me what you do.
Yes. Yes.
And they said a million, give or take, federal employees sent in something. Who's going to read them? Who has time to read all of them?
Here's the thing. Now, I've brought this up on my radio show before. We watched the Soviet Union not work because of centralized planning. People say they don't like the Department of Education because you can't have centralized planning with education going down to the states and local level. But what you're seeing here is centralized planning. This is what they do in fascist and communist and socialist countries. Somebody on high that's never met you before, never will meet you before, will make a very, you know, random decision based on your value, based on one email, one piece of information from on high. We can't say that we believe in free markets and free association as a democratic republic that believes in freedom and then think this is the way to get more efficient government. Philosophically, it's not cogent. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the next 12 to 24 hours. And then the president has to either go up there and defend it or possibly try to throw Elon Musk underneath the bus or do a third thing that's going to probably be disjointed between his message and what's happening.
But those requests for federal employees to send an email of what they do is tonight.
It's tonight.
11:59.
And we've been told this is going to be ongoing. So that's another pushback point that the president may have to answer to, not only to the American people with the joint session, but also with the rebuttal from the Democrats and whatever strategy they have to push back on this moving forward.
Lenny McAllister, check him out Sunday afternoons. Man who wears many hats. Thank you, Lynn. We'll see. It's a big, big week.
It's a big, and let's not forget, the debt ceiling crisis is coming up too, and they got to deal with that as well. So this is going to be an interesting week to see how this all plays out.
All right, Lenny. Thank you.
Thank you, and God bless you all out there.
This is the Big K Morning Show, and every Monday at this time, we check in with our Odyssey sports director, Jeff Hathorn. You can see Jeff on the radio with our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Jeff, good morning.
Morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. I want to start with the tragic news. University of Pittsburgh football freshman defensive back Mason Alexander tragically killed over the weekend near his hometown in Fishers, Indiana, a passenger in a car that had went off the road and hit a tree, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. This is staggering news for this team, for this coaching staff.
Yeah, and he had just enrolled in January. He's one of the early enrollees, graduated early from high school. And Larry, we just talked to him on Wednesday. He met with reporters, and he was so excited about this opportunity and how much he loved the coaching staff. And one of the things that will stick with me that he said is, you know, his goal, as almost every football player that comes to Pitt, was to play in the NFL. But he added that he wanted to play in the NFL and represent the coaches and the university at that level, represent them well. That was one of his goals. And
tough.
For the whole Pitt family, I mean, you'd think that, okay, he's only been on campus for a month and a half. But when you're recruiting a kid, you've known him for years, and just tragic news.
And I know that Coach Narduzzi and other team members have posted their, you know, it's the call you never want to get as a parent, a coach. And so our thoughts and prayers with the University of Pittsburgh, particularly with the football team and his friends, a young life snuffed out so early. That said, you know, everything else kind of pales in comparison, but let's talk about, in this case, the Pittsburgh Penguins finding new ways to lose. They had battled back down 2-0 yesterday. They had back-to-back games at PPG Paints. In fact, they've had a big stretch of home games. They only managed one win. But at the end of the second, after taking the lead, they allowed two goals in 55 seconds, one with 0.1 seconds left on a giveaway by Erik Karlsson that should have never, ever happened. The only player that really is consistent in my eyes has been Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. And boy, doesn't a losing streak by the Penguins, you know, kind of be put in perspective after the initial topic that we talked about. But
right.
Listen, Carlson's pass was lazy. I mean, he got a win off the faceoff and just slowly threw one across the ice. And he called it a crisp pass. If you watch it, it wasn't.
I saw
it. And intercepted easily. And then, I mean, it was a great – would you want your goalie to stop that? Yes. It was a really nice shot. And it was preceded by a breakaway by Tavares where they were able to get a two-line pass or a stretch pass right through the Penguins' defense for a breakaway 55 seconds earlier. I mean, it's just – that, and that's – and those are the breakdowns you see when you're not good. And this team isn't good. I mean, they have a couple of good players, but they're not good. And they're not going to win much over the next 19 games. Hopefully, by the trade deadline, they make some good moves to better ensure their future. And one of them would be finding a way to get rid of Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson leads the league in giveaways. If he was a charity, that would be awesome. But being a charity on the ice is not awesome. And that's what Erik Karlsson is. I mean, he has 99 points with the Penguins in 142 games. In his last year with San Jose before the trade, he had 101 points in 82 games. I mean, he has just been a disaster. And at $11.5 million, that trade is just – it's ended up being one of the worst in Penguins history.
That said, as just a fan, I am disappointed. Missing the playoffs for the third season in a row is imminent. Unless there's some miracle,
yeah,
which
there's no miracle.
No,
there's no miracle.
It's how many?
And let me say this about yesterday, real quick, because it's worth noting. Sidney Crosby passed both Bobby Hull and Gordie Howe yesterday. Howe in assists, Hull in career goals. Sid is now top 10 in assists in NHL history. If there is one positive to take from the Penguins, it's celebrating the career of Sidney Crosby.
I will say that 100%. And he's still out there giving it his best. And it's tough to see, but they're going to have to clean house. And you got new ownership, and now they're looking to sell another piece of the ownership. And it just seemed they fired so many people in the office that they cut off so many connections to the city and to people. What are they doing?
Well, I mean, listen, here's the tough thing with hockey is they rely so much on the gate, meaning the fans in attendance, that you're more hesitant to trade players because you think that, well, if you have some of these names or if you can hang on, then more people will come to see. So a complete overhaul is tougher in that sport because you're going to lose money. And the Penguins, they don't get in the playoffs, which they're not. They're going to lose money this year. And I think they're starting down the path of rebuild. You've seen some moves. They have a couple of decent young forwards. They're going to have a number of draft picks this year, which is an oddity for them. And hopefully they can pick up a few more here over the next couple of days. Listen, Rickard Rakell has a lot of trade value right now. He's not going to do anything here. So Rakell should be in play. If you could find a way, even if you have to eat salary to get rid of Carlson, maybe a couple of other players have some moderate value to where maybe you take a gamble on a younger guy. But I think this, though, and we saw it with the group before Sid, I think the fans will get behind a rebuild if they believe that the team is going in the right direction. So if I'm the Penguins organization, trust the fans. Sell off that they'll understand the process and they'll get behind young guys and Sidney Crosby.
All right, that said, the Pitt Panthers basketball team has also struggled. They've come close, but they're on kind of a long, slow burn in a season that seems so promising and even a lot of talk about getting in the tournament. That's not going to happen either.
Yeah, and they're a player away, and that player is probably the guy on their bench that is out for the rest of the year, and Damian Dunn. It's just like it's one play here or a couple of plays in games. I mean, Louisville's one of the best teams in the ACC. They're a top 20 team, and they gave them everything they could handle, even being, you know, without Dunn. They're just missing that, and things just aren't. They're having one of those years where every mistake they make is coming back to bite them, and they're just not quite deep enough to be good enough to overcome games where they make mistakes. And I think that's what you're seeing with this team. And next year will be interesting. I mean, listen, in college sports now, it's not just, you know, well, how good is the coach? How much money is the coach going to get to be able to turn this around? Because Louisville has a completely different team than last year. And they went from being a basement team to still a chance to win the ACC in a year. So it's possible. What kind of support is Jeff Cable going to get from the administration? And then it's up to him to make the right moves. And he has made some good moves in the portal to date.
All right, Jeff, any big takeaways from the combine for the Steelers? They got their quarterback all set, right?
Oh, I'm telling you, everything is all set. You could be fooled by so much this time of year, and there's so much disinformation. Fans should know this. Agents are throwing out information to try to jack up their clients, and teams are trying to throw out information to see what other teams are interested in. So be very wary of all these insiders with all these notes and tips and hot takes, because there's so much disinformation out there. Just know that there are some very fast receivers, and I would love to see one of them win with the Pittsburgh Steelers next year.
All right, this I know for sure. Terry Bradshaw is coming back to Pittsburgh. Not to start as the quarterback, but to be roasted by Mel Blunt and former players on April 11th. So you got that to look forward to. That's a for sure.
You think they have any material, Larry?
Oh, my gosh. That will actually be a fun night. All right, Jeff, thank you. And we'll be reporting from spring training this week down in Bradenton and some of the new faces on the Pirates squad. There aren't many new ones, but some. Right?
Turn them around. Give them a good speech.
I'll give them that Kurt Russell speech as Herb Brooks.
There you go.
No, wait, wrong sport. All right, Jeff, thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Odyssey Sports Director Jeff Hathorn. To be a fly on the wall when they confront somebody and say, you know, you have a loaded pistol in your pants or wherever you're carry-on, right?
And then the answer comes back, oh, what about it?
Sorry. Okay. Well, how much do they get fined? I heard it could be up to, what, 10 grand or something?
15. It depends on the circumstances, really. What normally will happen is we'll never find out who it is. And if we do, it's because they were arrested. That doesn't happen very often. If the person doesn't have a concealed carry permit, then they'll lose the gun. And the police are called in, by the way. So Allegheny County Police have, so everybody has to stand around and wait for the cops to get to the airport.
Well, that's
to deal with the gun, because
that's the more practical part.
They don't want the TSA people handling it, especially a gun with a bullet in the chamber. Can you imagine?
Just a heads up. You can't take your loaded firearms through the carry-on process.
It's not okay.
It's not.
You don't get to bring it with you on the plane. Oh, man. The word is just not getting out, apparently, to these dozens of people.
What if they
just here in Pittsburgh, you know?
Started zapping people right there with a taser. That would work.
That would do it. I can guarantee that would do it, I feel.
Sir, excuse me, you see the sign right here? Yeah. This big sign with the red and black letters and the picture of a pistol that says, you know, it's illegal to take this onto an aircraft, right?
Or maybe running a campaign of people being tasered, like simulations, but making it look like people are being tasered for bringing, you know, a gun to the checkout. And maybe that would spread around like a viral video or something. And
sir or madam, you have a loaded firearm in your carry-on.
Paul, I think you're right. Just a campaign of all the videos of people.
Either that or somebody who has widespread, you know, notoriety, who everyone would recognize, right?
Right.
Like, I can't think right off at the top of my head who a perfect person would be, but, you know, have them portrayed as a passenger going through, and then they've got a gun, and then they have to pay the penalty for it.
Kevin Costner.
There you go. Kevin Costner would be great.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah.
How about, that's it. Get a large cutout of Kevin Costner from Yellowstone holding his firearm, sidearm.
Yeah.
Saying, you can't take this on the plane. And if you do, you're going to get this. And, you know, give him just a friendly zap. Nothing serious. All right. We had a really detailed conversation with PennDOT's District 11 Executive Jason Zhang. I want to share, because a lot of people are going to be asking questions about this bridge closure over the HOV lanes over Route 28, what you need to know coming up.